God said to Noah and to his sons with him, I am now setting up my covenant with you, with your descendants, and with every living being with you, with the birds, with the large animals, and with all the animals of the earth, leaving the ark with you. I will set up my covenant with you so that never again will all life be cut off by flood waters. There will never again be a flood to destroy the earth. God said, this is the symbol of the covenant that I am drawing up between you, between me and you, and every living thing with you on behalf of every future generation. I have placed my bow in the clouds. It will be the symbol of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and bring the bow appears in the clouds, I will remember the covenant between me and you and every living being among the creatures. Floodwaters will never again destroy all creatures. The bow will be in the clouds, and upon seeing it, I will remember the enduring covenant between God and every living being of all the earth's creatures. God said to Noah, this is the symbol of the covenant that I have set up between me and all creatures on.
Just another piece of the small world. David Takagi just wanted me to know that Earl, where is Earl here today? Earl's not here. Earl brought some coffee a couple weeks ago. That is what we'll be serving across the way from Kenya. So we're all connected somehow in this world together, and it's quite lovely. I think just before I started here as pastor, sometime 7-8 years ago, there was an adult ed series in which you all watched some videos of some progressive theologians. Frederick Buechner, is that name ringing a bell with anyone? So Frederick Buechner passed away just a couple of years ago at the age of 92. Brilliant theologian, wonderful preacher. He is the person who I quote all the time, sort of in my own personal mantra that was mine before I came to Church of the Crossroads, which is where your greatest source of joy intersects with the needs of the world, go and find yourself at the crossroads. Where your greatest source of joy intersects with the needs of the world, go and find yourself at the crossroads. And I really should just sit down right now because that's such a wonderful statement, but it has really nothing to do with the rest of the sermon other than Frederick Buechner said it. And the reason why I lift up Frederick Buechner is there was a video series that I think some of you may have seen, in which he was part of that video series. And in that video series, he talked about one of the most difficult realities of his life. And that difficult reality was when his daughter was diagnosed with anorexia. And he talks about that time with his daughter in the most personal and most poignant and most heart-wrenching, because anorexia, as those of you know who have dealt with people who have anorexia, not only affects the person who is dealing with anorexia, but for the family, those that love this person, it is also terribly difficult because there's so little that you can do. And in a world in which we want desperately to make things better, when we feel powerless, it is really, really difficult. And what Frederick Buechner wrote about with his daughter with anorexia was, he said, my days began to be so filled with anxiety over the choices that she was making in her life, that whether or not she just ate a piece of toast in the morning would determine whether or not I had a good day or a bad day. And he writes and he says, my anxiety over her choices in life began to overwhelm my love for her. And as he went on and described it, he said, and what was happening is that the more I worried about her, the more I wanted to do the things that were necessary for her in order for her to thrive, the worse she got. And he said, finally, she only began to get better when she moved to the other side of the country, 3,000 miles away from me, and I had to let go of control. And the lesson that he dealt with is the pain and the difficulty of letting go of that control and giving her the agency, giving her the ability to make choices. Now, what does that have to do with what Whit just read for us from the story of the flood? And the truth of the matter is, the story of the flood, of which Whit just read the last part of three chapters in the book of Genesis that deal with the flood, is that there's a lot of actual similarities there. Because in chapter 6, Whit read from chapter 9. In chapter 6, The words that the writer uses to describe what God is feeling is God is grieved, grieved at the choices that God's creation, what human beings are making. God is sorrowful over what is happening. God is pained at what is happening. And just the same way that Frederick Buechner is grieved over the choices that his daughter is making in her life, God is grieved over that which humankind is making in the way that humankind relates to all of God's creation. And just as Frederick Buechner is pained by it all, you read a picture of a God who is in great pain. A God who, though being in great pain, is also omnipotent and has power, has control over the lives of all of the creation. In some ways, the very same ways that Frederick Buechner wanted to have control over the life of his daughter, wanted at times, I'm sure, to tie her down and put food in her mouth when she was struggling. God has control, and God, in the story of the flood, takes that control and uses it to create a do-over. Wipe it all out, start over. And at the end of all of that, the part that Whit reads to us today, is God looks at when all of this is done, that omnipotent power has been used to control, to create a do-over, and says, no, not going to do that again. And like Frederick Buechner, who had to let his daughter fly to the other side of the country and live her own life in order for her to get better, God willingly, in this story, takes God's hands, ties them behind the back, says, it's on you. That's what happens. If someone is powerful and has control over our lives and lets go of that control, and in some ways the control is kind of nice for those of us being controlled, because we can always blame them. We can always say, it's not my fault, they're in charge. But when they step back and say, I'm putting my hands behind my back, the responsibility now shifts onto our shoulders. And in the story of the flood that we are given in the book of Genesis, the responsibility very clearly is put onto our shoulders, because God takes the bow. And this is fascinating when theologians look at this. The bow, the rainbow that we see is so beautiful. The rainbow is also a symbol of a bow and arrow device that, when upright, is used as a weapon, but when put this way, is now being laid down and becomes a symbol of peace, that I will no longer use violence in everything that I wish to do to restore you to the way in which you have been called to live. Violence will no longer be a part of that. It's a huge shift. It is a huge shift. It is the shift that Frederick Buechner had to go through with his daughter to say, I can no longer control you. I can no longer control you. You have to make the choices. Now, here's the thing. Frederick Buechner's daughter moved 3,000 miles away, and she made choices, good choices, and her life shifted, and she began to thrive in ways that she was not able to thrive before, and she was able to return and reestablish a relationship with her father, and all was well because she had the agency to make those choices. One can look at humankind ever since this mythical story that we have. Given agency, given choices, have we indeed chosen wisely? That's the question that really emanates out of the story of the flood. Have we, given the opportunity, because God is no longer going to be in control, have we used those choices widely? Native American theologian Randy Woodley says, the ironic thing about the way that we have come to live is that we are working against our very own self-interests, against our own healing, against our own grandchildren's well-being. It says, by promoting systems and structures and ideologies and lifestyles that work against our own survival, we are reminded that good air quality is also good medicine. So is clean water, healthy soil. Even a stress-free life is known to prolong people's lives. We are choosing to live in ways that work against not only our own self-interests, but in the self-interests of our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, the generations to come. God, in the book of Deuteronomy, says, I call heaven and earth to witness. I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Choose life so that your descendants may live. That's the choice that is put before Noah and the descendants that will follow, is to choose life. Choose a way that is a way of a thriving and abundant life. And one can look at the historical record, particularly the historical record of the last 200 or 300 years, and say, have we made those choices? Have we looked at the consequences of the choices that we make? And we know the answer to that. We know the answer to that. We know that we have not done well. One needs to just look at this amazing island in which we live and look at the realities of what this island was, pre-Western contact. There are maps that show what these islands look like. The estuary that was Kauai Nui over in Kailua, that filtered all the waters from the Ko'olau's, no longer is able to function that way. Instead, now when we have heavy rain, those of us who live on the windward side get alerts that say, don't go swim at Kailua Beach because of the fecal content that is now rushing through that is no longer being cleaned. The estuary that was once Waikiki has been filled in so that more and more apartments can be built, more and more hotels can be built. The stream system that used to run from the top of the mountains through Manoa, through Palolo, through Makiki, and empty itself out into Waikiki, now empties into the Alawai Canal, where you are advised to not even go put your toes in the water there. Pearl Harbor, a place that was named because it was such a place that was so abundant with life, and the way the waters get fed in there, that it was filled with oysters. There are no oysters left in Pearl Harbor. Instead, there is a hardened community that is in, that is set there as military defense. What we have done with these islands has been done throughout the world. And part of that is a very significant shift in the way in which we understand ourselves, in the way in which we understand ourselves, that the biblical version is that we are called to understand that all that God has created in Genesis 1, we are told, are good and blessed. That in Genesis chapter 3, we are told to care for the land as if it is our brothers and sisters. All of that is the way in which we have been called to live, and we have chosen to live in a different way. Pre-Western contact will tell us that a lot of that is in the choices in how we relate. Shifts have happened. So one of those significant shifts that has happened is the way in which we view the elements of God's creation. For the Native Hawaiian people, pre-Western contact, water, fresh water, was everything. That's what our Waitata lectures were about all last week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, what Dr. Beamer was preaching about. The water is so essential. Dr. Ellen Davis, who is a professor at Duke Divinity School, I've quoted her before, says the word dominion that you find in the first chapter of Genesis should actually be translated to be the human exercise of skilled and creative interaction amongst our fellow creatures. That's what dominion is. The Native Hawaiian people understood that. So every water drop that fell on the Ko'olau's was understood to have a role. It either percolated in the ground that ultimately became the fresh water that we were able to drink and to bathe in, or it worked its way down to the stream structures through the Vawakua, through the realm of the gods, into the stream structures until it came to a place where humankind could divert it enough in order to turn it into the taro lo'i, where the roots of the taro would be able to filter that water, and then it is brought back into the stream system so it is absolutely clean, fresh water that is flowing out into the ocean, where that interaction of salt water and fresh water creates the place where there's the greatest abundance of fish, that of sea life. That was the system that they understood and they interacted with. What changed is we began to see all of those things as a commodity. when things become a commodity, when the resources, when we begin to call them resources instead of the gifts of God's creation, become a commodity, their value is in the amount of money that they are worth to us. Whether that is water, whether that is land, whether that is the very air that we breathe. And so this shift and this transition happens here in Hawaii so that the land no longer is something. The aina is no longer that which is part of the community, part of that which as our kuleana, our responsibility to care for, but instead becomes that which we as individuals or as an entity of individuals may own. Kirsten and I experienced the reality of those consequences of such choices 8 years ago on this past Thursday, February 22nd, 2016. Executive director out of Camp Mokulea, 8 months before we had quit commuting from Kailua and instead lived out of the executive director's house at Camp Mokulea. Those of you who've been out to the camp, you understand where that house is. It's at the end, just past the cabins. It is about 8 feet above the ocean, 10 feet away from the ocean, sitting on top of a wall or right behind a wall. The night of February 21 and the morning of February 22nd, we could not sleep at all because it felt like we were having cannon blasts that were hitting us at our house. Because a huge swell, a swell that was so big that day they ran the eddy for the first time in 10 years where you have to have 40-foot clean faces at Waimea Bay. Those very same waves were wrapping around the same north shore, powered by a northwest wind, powered by a northwest swell, powered by a full moon and its gravitational pull. It was what you would call a perfect storm. And that perfect storm was rolling over the reef like it was candy and hitting the wall that our house was right behind. And every time it hit that wall, the water would spray up, hit the roof, hit our windows, and then come back down on the ground. And when I woke up in the morning, actually didn't wake up, just waited for first light, walked outside, the space between our wall and our house was about 70 feet long, about 8 feet wide, about the size of a school bus, was a hole deep enough to hold that school bus. Why? Because Camp Mokulea, all the other homes along the North Shore had valued property as a commodity. Property as a commodity means that we need to make sure we have as much of it as possible because the more we have, the more value we have. And so what did they do over the generations? They built walls. They built walls to solidify their property in the building of a wall, in the building of a wall with an ocean. What you've created is a barrier for the waves to hit, and they either go up and over, percolate down, and in the percolation process down, they then take the sand out from underneath, or they hit that wall and they take the sand with you. And the composite pictures that we have of Camp Mokulea in that whole North Shore area is that 50 years ago, there was 50 to 100 foot of beachfront. Now there is 10 on a good day. We have lost almost all of that beachfront because we have built walls. Why did we build walls? We build walls so that we can maintain our property, which maintains financial value for us. In the process, we destroyed the system because the part of the camp that had no walls got those very same waves, but the sand absorbed the energy. The naupaka bushes absorbed the energy. They lost leaves, but they did not lose beachfront. And this happened all the way along the way. Now, why do I tell you this? Because there are consequences to our choices. There are consequences to our choices. And we, as people of faith, are called to consider those consequences to our choices from a faith perspective. And the faith perspective that has been given to us over thousands of years is that this creation that we are blessed to be a part of is interconnected, is interwoven, And we have a responsibility to that creation. We have a kuleana to it to care for it as it cares for us. Those have not been the choices that have been made over the years. And so when we see a fire season on the continent that seems to have no end, that is a consequence of choices that have been made. When we see rising tides and ice caps melting, those are consequences of choices that have been made. When we see those who have contributed the least to the problem being affected the most, those are consequences of the choice that we have made. It may have appeared to Kirsten and myself on February 22, 2016, that God was going against God's word of never again using water to destroy, because that water was destroying, but that wasn't God. That was a consequence of choices. But here's the thing. Just like Frederick Buechner's daughter, given agency, chose to live in a way that she could thrive, we are given the very same agency. The book that those of us that are reading during Lent, The Future We Choose, and if you're not in our Lenten book study, I still recommend, go buy the book. It's really a good and important read. It says to us, we have a choice for the future that we will make for ourselves and for the generations to come. There are certain things that have been baked into the system already by the choices that we have made already, but those things do not mean that life has to be horrible going forward. In fact, the future that is possible, when we begin to see all of this creation as a blessing and as something good that we get the privilege of being a part of, is a future that is more equitable, a future that is more green, a future that is more abundant, a future in which all of us are living better lives. That is the gift that is offered to us. We are given the gift of choice. We are given the gift of choice. And the biblical call, day in, day out, page after page after page, choose life. Choose life. That's what we are called to in the ways in which we live, to make the changes that are necessary. Am I without hope? I am brimming with hope. I am overflowing with hope because I know what we have the ability to do. On the day in which all those waves were conspiring to take our house into the sea, the community of Wailua, the boys' soccer team, they came down and they filled 1,000 sandbags to help us out. My staff worked 18 hours a day to help us out. We know how to cooperate. We know how to do it. It's just a matter of whether we choose it. God has called us to choose. May we do so. Amen.